did not choose this subject. This subject was given to me, and I had to speak on conflict and conflict in a healthy community. And I trust I will be able to share something out of there. Conflicts are everywhere. Wherever you go, there are conflicts, right from the international level. Right now, if you read in the newspaper, you have the Yemen government which has resigned, throwing the nation into chaos. Ukraine, there is a civil war going on with the Russians supporting one side. Egypt, some 215 cases have been washed out, and again, freshly, the court cases have started. There has been a mutiny going on, two sections of community, and this ISIS going on. Then we have some border skirmishes, and everywhere there are some kind of international conflict going on all the time. If you think of the national, we do have our border skirmishes. There has been cross-firing that is always there. We have to keep on looking at our neighbors. And right now there's a change of government in Sri Lanka. This government looks a bit more favorable to us, so hopefully the ties should improve. Myanmar, they're about on the verge of changing. They have a verge of having elections, so there is going to be some change. We hope it brings forth greater cooperation. Then we have the regional conflicts. We just had the state of Andhra Pradesh divided into two, and then Maharashtra is wanting to divide itself into Vidarbha. And so there are moves going on, some are for it, some are against it. And then also we have regions, Belgaum is always under dispute, who does it belong to. And then we have the language conflict. And so a couple of months back we had the Sanskrit issue that came up very strongly. German, which was an established language in the central school, they decided to wipe it out, and there was some request, and there is some issue that is going on. Some places we want to have English medium schools, and some people are paying to have vernacular schools, and there is a lot of language conflict in the land. There is the ideological conflict, which is presented by various ideologies and various parties and groups, and these are clashing, and so all these are issues that are there. Religious conflict is there. We have continuous events of these communal riots which are going on. So conflict is everywhere, no matter where you see. Well, in the churches there are denominations, and we also got caught into that one. I wish we were out of it, but unfortunately we are not. In Northern Ireland there was the Roman Catholic and the Protestant divide, and the Northern Ireland it went into serious political clash, and for decades that war was going on. We have had in history the Inquisition, that the Catholic Church oppressed those who are mutinying against it, and so on and so forth. The so-called Protestant group is called Protestant because they are protesting all the time. And now there are groups in the Protestant who are protesting against the Protestant. So that is going on. So conflicts are going on in the denominational levels at home. Perhaps some of these that I mentioned so far may not have affected us, what is happening far away. But this one is very close at home. And we have conflicts right in the midst of us. I do not know, some of you may be going through some court cases, or one of your uncles has swallowed up your property and has fabricated some paper, and though it may be technically belonging to your dad or your mom, but somebody is swallowing it up. There is that conflict there in your hometown. You are losing some precious property which is going on, somebody has swallowed it up. Or there are other conflicts in the home between husbands and wife. We just saw a few of them. Wanting to produce some zing. Not that we are fighting all the time, they said, but then we do have some fights. We have fights over ego issues. We have an ego issue. My wife is from south of India and I am from Gujarat, so we have some issues that are there, especially over food. And for them, the south people from south like the food to be of a particular type, maybe the item called rasam is very strong, rice is there. For us, those in Gujarat, we like our chapatis better. And so you can have quarrels which can go on and on. And so we have some issues at the home. We have gender issues, we have dowry issues, we have generational gaps, and so on and so forth. And we find that all these issues are there in our land all the time. Now, where does it start? And so I think the first conflict started no sooner God made the heavens and the earth and started, planted the Garden of Eden. And then in the Garden of Eden we have the first quarrel that took place. And in Adam and Eve we have the story from then on called the Tale of Two Seeds. Adam and Eve, decided that whatever God had said looked good, but then the serpent came and gave another offer and that looked better, and they felt that God was cheating them by not allowing them to eat of a particular fruit of a particular tree, because if they ate it, they will become equal to God. Right now they were subordinate to God and they had to give an account every day to God, and now if they became equal to God, they would not have to do that. They would be at par. That was the offer, suggestion made by serpent, and these Adam and Eve thought, maybe this is a better offer, maybe God cannot be trusted, and so they decided to listen to the serpent. And once they did what they did, it dawned on them that what actually God said was true, because at that point of time they began to have the knowledge of good and evil, but they did not have the ability to overcome the evil inside them. Always there is a war inside them of the good and evil, and in that war it was always the evil that won. They did not know what to do with it, so there was the conflict that came up. And from then on the conflict has gone down the ages to Cain and Abel, and you have Cain killing Abel, and it goes down to further down Jacob and Esau, and Esau is fighting with Jacob. Jacob is trying to connivingly take away the birthright that Esau had. You go down the biblical story, there are so many stories, and right within the family there is a conflict that goes on. And that was said when this issue came between serpent and woman, that is Eve. God said, I will put enmity between the woman's seed and the serpent's seed, and they will be at war. And the serpent's seed will try to bite the heel of the woman's seed, but the woman's seed will crush the head of the serpent's seed. So this is the story of two seeds, the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent. That speaks of the godly nature, the righteous nature, and the ungodly or the worldly nature. These two are always at war, and this tale of two seeds going on is going on till right now at this point of time. So we have this interesting story that is there, and you find therefore from then on they start living in sin. And what is sin? Sin is nothing but a living a lifestyle independent of God. That is what Adam and Eve did. They decided not to listen to God, they decided to listen to somebody else, which they thought they had a better offer, but eventually they sold their soul to somebody else. And this conflict resulted, first of all, in a conflict with God Himself. And so they clashed with God. The result was, because they disobeyed what God had done, God had to send them out of the garden. They lost their wonderful privilege of where they were. So you find that unusual thing that is happening to Eve. In other words, conflict starts when this vertical relationship is broken. And so that's the starting point. Unless we get that part clear, we will not be able to sort out the issue that comes between you and me and between our society. So that is the first thing, the conflict with God. The vertical part between us and God is the one that has been affected, first and foremost. And there is that, if you like, a kind of a covering that comes which prevents us from relating to God. There is some darkness that comes, and we find it is difficult to penetrate into that zone. And there is the feeling that God is somewhere far away there, and we are far away here, and we are not able to connect or relate. So that's the first and the foremost part that comes. The second one that comes is the issue in the horizontal realm and the conflict in human relationship. You find what happened when they were finally got caught by God, Adam and Eve, and when God came in the cool of the day and called up, Adam, where are you? And Adam trembled. And then he said, where are you? He said, I'm hiding behind a tree. Why are you hiding behind the tree? Because you realize I'm naked. He said, you realize you're naked? Did you eat of the fruit that I told you not to eat of? And Adam said, did not know, he had eaten, didn't know what to do. So he immediately started the first blame game. And he said, yes, I ate, but this woman whom you gave me, she's the one who gave it to me. And so immediately he passed on the blame to his wife. And I have a theory, and this theory goes like this, that when God would come, if you look into the rest of the scripture, there used to be a mighty rushing wind that would come with the arrival of God. If you look in Exodus, when God came down the mountaintop to meet with Moses, there was thunder, lightning, and you know, there was a storm that is there. There was a storm that accompanies. And another picture is there, when it comes, there are sound of many wings of cherubims that kind of flap. And so, all this is creating a sound of a mighty wind. Another portion in Acts, Psalm 39 says, the voice of God is able to shake mountains, is able to create earthquake, is able to split huge cedar trees. You know, huge oak is a mighty big oak, can be split into two. That's what it says in the Bible. So I want to imagine that when Adam and Eve sinned and they discovered they were naked, they did not know how to hide it. They found the biggest leaf was a fig leaf. I've seen one, really big, almost circular. So they took those leaves, stitched it together, and covered themselves. To cover the nakedness. But imagine when God comes, there's a mighty rushing wind. Now, if you own fig leaf clothes, you would not feel very secure. I'm sure none of you have worn it. Maybe if you took part in some drama, you might have worn it, but otherwise nobody has worn it. But it could be latest fashion, now you never know. So Adam and Eve decided to hide themselves and they hid behind trees because their wind was too powerful. But when God said, Adam, where are you? He said, the voice of the Lord split set up. That means this tree behind you is hiding. Let us sit up. And already the wind was there. So he got caught. And now he had no other way but to catch hold of his wife and put her in the front. And said, this woman whom you gave me. And that's the only way he was trying to hide. And she tried to pass on the blame game to serpent. And he says, this serpent he began me. And so they are passing on. And the serpent wanted to pass on the blame, but he had no leg to stand on, so he could not pass on the blame to anybody else. That is how it was. And so you find the blame game, the result in the horizontal conflict began right here. Continue on with Cain and Abel, as you find Cain killing his brother Abel, jealousy, envy was there. And you'll find horizontal conflict arises, but it starts with the vertical being disrupted, so the horizontal is affected. And I think that would be my premise on which I would be working at. And therefore, the solution lies in somehow reconciling the vertical, then affecting the horizontal. And so the cross, if I may picturize it, the cross has got two beams, as it were. There is that vertical beam which tells you the heaven and earth is united by that vertical beam, and the horizontal beam is that is where uniting that which is between you and me, between mankind. And so God took initiative because man could not take the initiative. And so man had to work at whatever God said. Only he was able to do that. I would think something like this. Let's say our blood is infected with HIV, let's say, or something like that. And now you know that there is no way we can get out of this HIV. The only way we can get out of this HIV is, suppose for some reason we were able to drain out our blood 100%, 100% drain out our blood, and replace that blood with some fresh blood. Suppose that was the only way out. So the idea would be, can somebody donate me blood, so that my HIV contaminated blood can completely be drained out and your good blood be given to me. The trouble was, everyone had HIV, so where to get that non-contaminated blood? That was the biggest thing. Because the sin had gone to everywhere. Everyone was spiritually contaminated, spiritually had HIV, what is it? So God took initiative, because man in himself could not help himself. So God decided, I will come down as a human being, and will have that blood which is non-contaminated, and I will offer my blood so that you can have life. So he took initiative. The death on the cross is another way of saying a blood transfusion available for us to ensure that our blood is drained out and a new blood can be brought forth. So the vertical component initiative was taken by God himself. What did I do? And reconciliation in the vertical dimension happened. God took initiative and bridge the divide. On the day Jesus died on the cross, one unique thing happened. If you know anything about the temple where the Jewish people worshipped that point of time, the temple had many sections. there was a large open area where generally people gathered. Then there was a place called the holy place where only the authorized priests were able to go and the Levites were able to go. Some, you know, selected people, it would be like equivalent to some pastors would be able to walk into that holy place and do some pastoral duties, or maybe some lighting a lamp or putting some bread on the table and so on and so forth. They were allowed to go into this holy place. But after the holy place, there was still another place called the most holy place, and the holy place and the most holy place was separated by a big curtain, and the chief priest, that means the biggest fellow, he could go only once a year, and that way he could only go once a year if he took some blood of some animals with him and went there. He went with fear and trepidation, because if there was any fault in his going there, he could be struck dead into the most holy place. Often therefore they would tie a rope on his leg and then he would go, because the rope would be brought right up. In case he didn't come out by a certain time, they would pull the rope because he would have been fallen dead and nobody else would go there. They would be stuck there. That was a big curtain there. But the day Jesus died on the cross, at the time he breathed his last, it says the curtain got torn into two. From top to bottom, not from bottom to top, but from top to bottom, a supernatural thing took place. The curtain got torn into two, ripped into two. It is as if God is saying, I have made for you to be reconciled to the most holy place where the presence of God was there. It was an initiative taken by God by his own effort, by his own way. He brought his son Jesus to be as a substitute, to give that blood transfusion by which we can do what we are supposed to. So that was the vertical element that got done into our lives. That is why we are what we are, mainly because of his work. And the judgment against man was dealt, the sin was paid for. On the other hand, now here is another one. Look at this. I want to say that God did the initiative with man. He took initiative. God did not take initiative, we would have been perishing with that spiritual HIV. That would be. Now, I want to just make a presentation here. In the Old Testament, God took 5 days to create the heaven and the earth, and on the sixth day, the last day, he created man. Right? So he started on a Sunday, God started his work on a Sunday, continued on till Thursday, and then on Friday he created man. So man was formed on Friday. Adam and Eve were formed on Friday. So their first full day was Saturday. Saturday was the seventh day. And God says seventh day, all right. So man's first day was God's seventh day, and God's seventh day being man's first day was all right. So imagine, man started his life with a holiday. How do you like it? I love the idea that man started not by work, but by rest. By just relaxing. First, he just came, he just relaxed. How do you like? Sometimes, you know, some people join a new company and they join from first, but first happens to be Sunday. So they join on second, but they get paid for first. It was something like that. So they, man was able to start his week in the first day as a day of rest. And so I want to tell you that the starting position for us to reconcile with each other is from a place of rest. And I would like to use the word sit. Alright, if you're right from sitting, use sit. In other words, from the place of relaxing, we can start. It's a place where you can chill out, then you start the relationship. Why don't you tell your neighbor, hey, chill out, relax. Alright? And that is what happened. That is what happened in the Old Testament. Starting with the place of chilling out by relaxing, because God did everything and gave it to man. That is a beautiful creation. But in the New Testament, a similar thing has happened. A man starts with the finished work of the cross, because after Jesus' death on the cross, the day that Christians met was not on a Saturday, but was on Sunday. They began on the first day of the week to have a service, and the first day of the week they began to have certain things, and they valued the first day, and eventually the first day of the week, being a Sunday, became the public holiday, a weekly off. And so, in New Testament, man begins his walk, or begins his life, by a position of rest, resting in what Christ has done on the cross. Right? It's not only I'm talking of holiday part, I am talking of a rest between our relationship which was strained between God and man. I remember I was about 15 years old. I went to some evening meeting like this. There was a preacher who preached, and his name was Mr. Alfred, and Alfred preached, and he said at the end of the thing that there was a man called Jonah who suffered in a certain way 3 days and three nights, and he says, likewise, Jesus went on the cross and he was buried 3 days and three nights, and then he rose again. And he said, he gives an offer of forgiveness and a brand new life. Why don't you take it? And I was sitting there, you know, sitting like this, and I thought, this is the best offer one could ever have. And as he kept speaking, an overwhelming sense of my sin became, you know, came over me, and wherever I was sitting, I began to weep there. And when the man said, why don't those who feel you want to pray a prayer, come forward. My feeling there was, everyone should go forward because it's the best offer. But I was not looking at others, I decided to come up. And then he guided me afterwards, and he prayed with me and helped me. And when he prayed with me and helped me, and then I went back to my seat, he showed me some Bible verses. I was only 15 years old. And then the meeting got over, and I went home. I prayed the prayer, he showed me, he prayed, I prayed after him, and whatever he did, and he prayed over me, gave me a few Bible verses to read. And I was going back, it was about a 15-20 minutes walk. And as I was going back home, I certainly felt there was a sudden sprint in my walk. I was feeling a little light on my feet, and I was wondering, why is that? And then I discovered, as I was going to try to analyze, I realized that heaviness or that burden inside, kind of guilt that was there, is no longer there. It has gone. I felt kind of somebody has taken that guilt or that burden away. That is why I was feeling that sense of lightness. Secondly, I felt was that distance. I felt that far away God. I no longer felt that. I suddenly felt it was very, very close. In fact, I could feel he is willing to have a conversation. So I begin to initiate that, and I felt God said, are you enjoying what you're enjoying? I said, I'm very much enjoying. He said, that is because my son has forgiven your sins. Your burden has been rolled away and you are free. And I said, wonderful. I would like to be in this state all the time. He said, sure. And I like to help others do what I've enjoyed. He said, sure, you carry on. And one day I will call you that you can serve me in a way that you want to be to serve others. That's why I decided at the age of 15. Eventually I left my job at 28. But the point I was making is this, that I sense that thing go away, and I sense the nearness with God, that vertical distance that we experience is gone. There is a unity that comes, a blending together that comes, and it is on this vertical distance that came, that unity is the real one that we are enjoying. It is through that we are resolved. And therefore we start our resolving, we are trusting in the word of the cross. And so Ephesians 1 says, he has blessed us with every spiritual blessing. I want to give you an example. Let's say you decide to start a business. You're a married person. You have a couple of kids. You start to have a business, let's say. And you are into some selling of paints. You've got huge quantity of varnish. You've got huge quantity of other things. And you are decided to sell. You've gone to various places and people have, big shops have bought your stuff, large quantity of paints, tons of paint there. So you book it, and if you discover that if you get all the orders through, you should be able to earn some X amount of money. Right? Some lakhs of rupees. So much money that you decide what to do when the money comes. So you decide, if the money comes, I'm going to upgrade my car, and this car I'm going to buy, I'm going to take this house. I'm going to get this furniture, and then you said, I will not wait, I will go right now and get the car and get the house and get all the things that I want. So you shift into a fantastic house in a good locality and you upgrade yourself to another better car. Everything that you wanted, you have. The thing is that the money is yet to come. So eventually, when the time comes, the Diwali season is over, the Christmas season is over, by now all your paint is sold, hopefully people have painted it out. So you go to the shop, all the shops, and say, can we settle our accounts? And they say, yes, we can settle. Here is all your paint back because nobody bought your paint. They say, what is it? Yeah, they bought Asian paint, they bought Nerola paint, but your paint had no demand whatsoever. They said, it's an unknown brand. And so here's your paint back.
The trouble is when you take your paint, it is stored for a long time, now the paint also don't know where. All you got to do is just take it out and put it in the drain. That's all the thing. And so everywhere you go, hardly anything is sold, and you are in serious debt. And from wherever you have borrowed money to get that varnish and all the ingredients, why? Those creditors have begun to come and knock on your door. And you are petrified, because now you are in debt. And so eventually the creditors realize you got nothing, so they have come, somebody comes, takes your car away, somebody comes, takes all your gadgets away. And every day you are, it's stripped. Now the next day they are going to come and take your house as well. You are going to be thrown out of the street, and you got nowhere. You got no one to help you, you're absolutely embarrassed. And you're absolutely bankrupt to the core, you are in great debt, you could be even behind bars if somebody pursued you. In that state, as you're in that state, you get one more phone call, and you're dread to pick it up, but you know, you tremble this unknown one, I hope it's not one of my creditors. And you put it up and you say, yes, and it is from a lawyer. You get even more. I'm getting a court case. And the lawyer says, there is something to your benefit if you report IP. So, you get the details, you go to meet the lawyer. He says, your grandfather who was in Malaysia, he is no more, but he had 500 acres of rubber estate. And all that is finished, and all the money is coming to you. It's about 505 crores. And here is the money. It's all been bequeathed to you. 505 crores? I didn't even see one crore. 505 crores is a too huge figure for any one person to handle. But that has come to your hands just one day before you've been picked up. Now you imagine what is your state at this stage when you get the 505 crores as opposed to what was there in the beginning of the day. Absolutely bankrupt, nothing left. Suddenly, everything has been put in a huge sum, such a huge sum you cannot dream or imagine, even if you try to blow up amount, 505 crores, stupid amount of money. And so you have enough money to do that. And that's what God has done, as it were. He said He has blessed us with every spiritual blessing, 505 crores. And then He has chosen us. He has adopted us. He has chosen us because nobody was bothering us. We were being rejected. We were thrown out of the house. Our things were being taken away. But He has chosen us, just like His grandfather who died and gave it to us. He has chosen us and bequeathed the property to us. He has adopted us. We were orphans, but He has adopted us. He has redeemed us. All this is mentioned in the Bible for Ephesians chapter 1. He has redeemed us. It is like we were slaves. We were being sold in the marketplace by the creditors. But He has bought us out because of that money that He has given us. He has loved us. Everyone was discarding us. The creditors were harassing us. He has predestined us. We were unemployed. Our business also failed. But He has given us a job description, a letter in advance, predestined for some particular purpose. He has forgiven us all our past, all our bankrupt cases. All that is there is all wiped out. We can get back much more better than what we had before. He has sealed us. That means anointed us and confirmed us and assured us by the presence of His Holy Spirit. We could even add some more into that holy area, and I have written down a couple of more points, and that is He has made us to sit together with Him in heavenly realms. So, if God is sitting on some thrones, then there are throne portions of it where He has made us to sit together with Him. I told you that everything starts by sitting down, because He has done it all. It is from the place of relaxing, it's the place from chilling out on the most powerful throne. We are made to sit together with Him in the heavenly realm. So in order to resolve the conflict, not only we make peace with Him, but He gives us a place and position which we don't really have not earned it. We have not done anything. He has worked hard and He has given it to us. That is the beauty of the whole thing. And so now comes the horizontal part. Alright? Comes the horizontal. Christ has broken down the middle wall of partition between us. Alright? Now, there was that curtain between God and us. Now there is a wall between you and me. What kind of wall? You can describe. Between the Jews and Gentiles. Best way I can describe is the Brahmin and the Dalit. Alright? Because the Jews thought they were like Brahmins. And they looked down upon the non-Jews, which were called the Gentiles. So just like they looked up, we have the same thing in our land. The Brahmins and the Dalits. What is it divide? You know, they don't allow you to drink water from their wells. And the temples also are separate, though they are from the same religion. Even their gods are different. The gods of Brahmins are different, the gods of Dalits are different. Though they may be from the same community. So, the same kind of war that exists between these two communities, Jesus Christ came and He has wiped out, removed out that middle wall of partition between these kind of communities, between men and women. There is no difference. You have, right now you are all seated together. Yeah? Did you know that Bible says that when it comes to salvation, that is moksha, there is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither the educated or civilized or the barbarian, or neither male nor female, all are equally, all have equal access to this moksha or salvation. So Christ offers this offer of salvation to men and women equally. Irrespective of age, irrespective of sex, no problem with gender bias. He, without any gender bias, he is giving the offer open equally to men and women. And all he says in 1 Peter chapter 3 verse 7 that men and women are joint heirs before God. Joint heirs, not separate, joint heirs. In other words, women get same rights as the men. It is wonderful. Very redeeming, very liberating. Now, it may not be so everywhere in terms of if you look at the, say, the according to the Indian Hindu faith, the woman doesn't get moksha. She has to be reborn as a man. Only then can she get moksha. If you look at the Islamic faith, you have a man who may have a wife and he is not satisfied. He can think of marrying a second wife, third wife, fourth wife. If one or two or three are not enough. In other words, his rights include marrying four women. But if woman is not satisfied, can she marry four men? No. In other words, it is lopsided. It is favoring a man, not favoring a woman. There is a discrimination. But with Christ, He is saying, no, I give you the offer, men and women, as the same. So the middle wall of partition between men and women is broken down. The qualified and illiterate, the educational barrier is also broken up. If you think of the disciples of Jesus, it says they were illiterate and ignorant men. They were fishermen. Have you seen fishermen? I live next to a docks. I live to some docks. If you ever go to the fishing docks, you always think of a fisherman with a little cap there, the kind of a loincloth which is stuck into his underwear. Alright? So few of his disciples were nothing but fishermen. In other words, they were ignorant men, illiterate men. But it says they were appointed as apostles and they went and shook the then known world. See, I come from Gujarat, my mother is to make a Gujarati place. Did you do Gujarati? You have to trust whatever I say. That means he is qualified, but he is not educated. Yeah? He is qualified, but not educated. Yeah? And but there are some people who are not qualified, but they are highly educated. And the disciples were that type. They didn't look qualified, didn't have a degree certificate, but they were highly educated by Jesus Christ. They shook the then known world. And so, in Christ's domain, because of what he has done on the cross, the qualified and the illiterate both get an equal opportunity. You don't have to get degrees to attain any particular access. North Indian and South Indian, even that we have this North Indian, South Indian problem. I'm sure that is there. Now, when you think of South Indian, do you know that North Indians don't understand South properly at all? Because all South Indians are called Madras. Correct? No. Now those in the south know that Madras is separate, Malayali is separate, Canada is separate, and Andhra is separate, but North Indians don't understand. Everybody is called Madras. So, and they have a bias when they say Madras, there is a derogatory way of saying it. Now within the South Indians, they have their own derogatory way of saying to one another. That's another issue there. Right? And then South Indians look to the North Indians and they have those jokes about the Guju jokes, the Panju jokes, the bomb jokes, the Bihari jokes. The Bhaiya jokes, they have all. We have derogatory jokes about many of these communities. And this, there is a divide that can go on in many places. So, there is that cultural barrier of the various cultures, but Christ is able to bring to us. Now, I'm sure, which community do you come from? Let me just ask. So, I told you I come from Gujarat. My wife comes from Chennai. Madrasi. Chennai. Shillong, there's not in it.
titles from our place, there's Sivan, Kerala, Bangalore, Mangalore, Chennai, Kerala, Andhra, Kerala, Maharashtra, Jai Maharashtra. Shimla, Shimla, so here you have another North person. Kerala, 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 sorry. Kerala, okay. Mangalore, Chennai, Kerala, Uttarakhand, Kerala, Kerala and Tamil Nadu, UP. So here you are. So why on earth all the North Indians, South Indians are sitting in this room? Why on earth they're sitting? You are sitting because Christ is broken down the middle wall of partition between all. And you can relate to each other as a brother and sister only because Christ gives you the ability to see each other as brother and sister. I'm married to my wife. When I married her, I took an oath. And I took an oath like this. I, Stanley, do take you as me to be my legally wedded wife. Love and to cherish, to have and to hold for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer. Sickness or health. Until death do us part. Alright? That means when she dies or I die, that is the end of the story. And I want to tell you this. You and I are joined together for eternity. In other words, this union of ours is long lasting than this union of me and mine. Think about it. She's also in Christ, so she'll also be there in eternity. The point is, this union is not only for life, not only for short time, but long time, all because Christ has done it. And East and West, whether developed or the backward, or whether you think of the superior or the inferior, the white or the black. What is an I know of a black man who was traveling in the plane, is sitting on an aisle seat, something like where she's sitting on. And then he saw another white man on the other seat. And the white man had some book which was opened. And that book had gilt edges. Gilt edges means he knows there is only one book of the Bible. So the black man looked across. This man reading something and he kind of peeped over. Discovered it is the Bible. So he reached out of the aisle and tapped him. And the black man said to the white man, "The Bible?" And the white man said, "Yeah." Just removed the seat belt and he stood up. A huge fellow. So the white man also removed his seat belt and he stood up. And then they both hugged each other. He didn't know from Adam who this is. He didn't know who is. He's white and he's black. But the fact that he was reading Bible got him excited because he suddenly felt he is a brother in the Lord. And the other man realized the way you're asking, he must be a Christian. And so, right in the middle of this flight, 35,000 feet up in the air, they are at the Hadith. In an instant, the eye that was there disappeared because they met. There is no such barrier, east or west, culture or inferior suffering, or inferior anything. No other barrier. Horizontal reconciliation has taken place because Jesus has broken down the middle wall of partition. So how do I handle conflict in my community? Number one, keep the right posture. My posture should then arise out of what God has done for me. If all that I have, 105 crores, put into my account, not because I earned it, it's because my grandfather earned it and gave me. So, everything has been earned by Jesus Christ and put into my account, I cannot boast of the 105 crores. I cannot boast of anything that I have. All that I have is done by Christ. If all that I have is done by Christ, if all that you have is done by Christ, I can only be in humility. I cannot boast that I have what I have. Even if I have 105 crores, I cannot be showing off my 105 crores because I have got it only because somebody else. So, my posture should be a posture of humility, gentleness, patience and love. If I was in bankruptcy, my creditors were going to throw me out on the street, nick of time, I was saved. And if you are now in bankruptcy, I must be patient with you. I must show love for you because I know sooner or later you are going to get that help. You are also going to get out of that mess that I was in. So my posture towards each other should be posture of humility, gentleness, patience and love. That is what it says in Ephesians 4:1. Secondly, we must persevere to maintain unity, and what God has done between us, maintain or keep in the unity of the Spirit to the bond of it. Maintain means He has already made it. You only have to maintain it. Right? Which means He has removed the middle wall. He has removed this wall. He has removed the middle wall. Our duty is to only maintain. I need to really acknowledge that you are my brother, you are my sister, I am your brother, so on and so forth. Do you remember the sevenfold unity? Ephesians 4 says that
we are one body, one spirit, one hope, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father. He has done it. He reminds us, see, there is an awareness, we got to be aware. Only when we are aware, it works. Otherwise, if we are not aware, it does not work. So, thirdly, submit to the fivefold ministry. Ephesians 4, 11 to 16 says that when Christ went on high, ascended on high, He gave gifts of men, and those gifts are apostles, prophets, pastors, teachers, and evangelists, fivefold ministry. And what do this fivefold ministry, these leaders do? They equip the church so that the church can get on with the world. So that the goal of the church, that we will all be united, all will grow in the maturity of Christ, and all will be intimate, will have the knowledge of Christ. So the core of this unity and submission is unity, maturity, and intimacy with Christ. And if we are united, mature, and intimate with Christ, the whole body will grow as we give and take from each other. So as we give and take, we will grow. But we submit to the fivefold initiative there. And then we need to, what is known as put off and put on. If we have dirty clothes, we remove it out. And the good clean clothes, we put it on. So, clothes have been given to us by God. So we need to only just do the job of putting on. Notice that nothing we are doing is out of our own initiative. It is only out of Him. Now, here is the point. Christ has done, we began with the position of relaxing, chilling out, sitting. Now we are getting up and we are walking into the goodness of what is God. It is like we started by sitting and God gave us an ATM card. Now we are getting up to encash the ATM card. So we, and if I may use the word, from the position of sit, we started to walk. Walk in harmony. Walk in the goodness of what God has done. So sit in the confidence of what God has done for us. Now walk in the harmony of what God has done. So sit and walk. These are all the ways of walking. Our symbol is cross. Cross means no right, no privileges, no claims, only responsibility. Cross means my will is crossed out. And we'll see the next two slides for what is to put up and what to put on. Romans 12 1 says, therefore in view of God's mercy upon us, He urges us to offer our bodies as living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is our spiritual act of worship. That means we don't go with rites, we only go with the attitude of sacrifice, of giving to God, and He gives us. This is what we put off. And in the book of Ephesians, we have these words, transgressions, sins, disobedience, some vertical, some horizontal, sinful nature, objects of wrath, excluded, without hope, without God, alienated, cunning, craftiness, deceitfulness of scheming, futility of thinking, darkening their understanding, hardening of hearts, loss of sensitivity, sensuality, impurity, continual lust for more, deceitful desires, also anger, etc., greed, obscenity, idolatry, joking. So all this is part. Now this is the dirty clothing that we have, and our duty is to ensure this clothing will contaminate, will give a bad smell and offer, you know, prevent us from relating. Our duty is to put off and throw this clothes, dirty clothes out, because God wants us to do that. Instead, put on these good clothes which He gives us again. The good clothes are described by grace, peace, blessedness, holy, blameless, wisdom, understanding, revelation, hope, saved, and truthfulness, hardworking, going down, sacrificial, serving, honoring, respecting, sincere of heart, wholeheartedness, prayerful. What a wonderful contrast between what we are removing, what we are throwing, and what we are doing. So from sick, we put into action, that is the walk. And finally, this is what we will do. And Ephesians, different categories of a healthy community, and we have this few categories, like church as a community, horizontal, family, husband and wife, parents and children, and extended family, employers and employees, and society. And in Ephesians 6:10, we see the real enemy. He said the real enemy is, and the real enemy is Satan, and his hordes of demonic forces and principalities. And the writer of Ephesians, Paul, says, when you see these evil forces, you stand your ground and resist the devil in their hold. In other words, if I may conclude by three action words, sit, walk, and stand against the enemy. How do you resolve conflict in a healthy community? You resolve by sitting down and trusting in what God has done with us vertically, and what God has done with us horizontally. After sitting, that means relaxing and enjoying, then walk into the goodness of it. Take action, throw away the old clothes, put on the new clothes, submit to authority, reconcile, be conscious of His oneness, maintain that unity, And only thing is, now you resist the powers of darkness. You are not the powers of darkness. You are not able to resist. I don't have to fight with you. I don't have to be quarrelsome with you. I have to fight against the real enemy, and that is Satan. If you realize he is the enemy, he is our friend, he is our family, that is how we can have an absolute healthy community in the midst of us. I trust that we will come from a position of rest. As it's done in Old Testament, so also New Testament. Sit, relax, and then walk out the goodness that God gives us, and ultimately resist the power of darkness. We will be able to together fight against it. And therefore, I don't have to fight against a Hindu, because he's not my enemy. I don't have to fight against the Islamic man, because he's not my enemy. My enemy is Satan. And I can love the Hindu, I can love the Christian, I can love the Sikh, I can love the Jain. Religion is not an issue, I can love everyone. I need not love the educated and the rich, I need not and reject the poor, I can love everyone, because they are not the enemy, they are my friend, they are my family. The real enemy is Satan. I stand up against him. That is how possible it is. If you do that, there will be great peace and joy in our lives. Amen.